Are you ready for a whole new way of being in the world? Welcome to Living from the Inside Out with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is imagination, innovation, and discovery. And the numbers to call to get coaching on having what you want and thriving, and just to explore this whole idea of imagination, innovation, and discovery. 1-866-254-1579. Toll-free in the United States and Canada, that's 866-254-1579. Outside the U.S., you can reach the show by dialing your country code, generally 001-760-918-4300. And we'll get to calls a little later in the show, and we may even have an extra special guest caller who I invited on thinking that I was doing a completely different show that I'm doing, but since I invited him, I might bring him on anyways. But I wanted to start by setting the table. I wanted to start by talking about a distinction between imagination, innovation, and discovery. Now, I always kind of feel that it's important when I point this out to think that this is this isn't the only way to use those words, right? Because I'm making this distinction doesn't mean that when somebody else says imagination, they might mean what I mean when I talk about innovation. When I'm talking innovation, that might be what somebody else means by creation. When I'm talking about discovery, that might be what someone else meant by something else. But I do think it's useful to make a distinction. So let's start with imagination. Right? There's an Einstein quote that imagination is more important than knowledge. But see, I don't think the way that he used the word imagination is the way most of us use it. When I used to be an NLP teacher, a neuro-linguistic programming teacher, one of our operating principles, one of the fundamental ideas that we worked from, was that memory and imagination share the same neurological circuitry. The mind cannot tell the difference between a real and an imagined experience. In other words, the notion, from an NLP point of view, was you could create future memories, right? You could change personal history. You could use this neurological circuitry, which when it was focused on the past would be called memory, and when it was focused on the future, we'd call imagination, in order to create a better future or even a better past. And it was interesting. It was neat. You could really experience it. Really felt like things changed when you did it, but it shared the same neurological circuitry, which meant it had the same limits. That imagination wasn't really freedom. It was the opposite of the known. It wasn't really a journey into the full-on, unknown, infinite potential, infinite possibility of the universe. Imagination is, yeah, I don't like this, so I'd like that. I don't like pizza, so I'd like fish. I don't like being poor, so I'd like to be rich. I don't like being unhappy, so I'd like to be happy. Oh, let me imagine myself happy, rich, eating fish. Gosh, it's gorgeous. Right? So it's inherently tied to the same circuitry. It's inherently tied to what you already know. I don't want to be like my mother, so I'm going to be this kind of person. Well, that ties you to your mother, right? There was I'm going to get the names wrong, but when I was living in the UK, the Archbishop of Canterbury's son became an underground club DJ. And he became known as, you know, in his attempt to rebel against his dad, he became known as the high priest of underground hip hop or whatever it was. So even in his, I can imagine a totally different life. It was actually just the opposite life. It was a mirror image reverse. And so the limit of trying to use imagination to create the future is it's always going to be a future based on the past. It will be better than the past in your imagination, or worse than the past, because we can use the imagination that way too. But essentially, our imagination is intimately linked with memory. It uses the same neurological circuitry. It uses the same part of the brain. Well, so what do I mean by innovation? Well, innovation is new that's in the word to innovate, to bring forth the new. Something that wasn't already in the system. It activates a different part of the brain circuitry. That's why when we innovate, we talk about things coming to us out of the blue. It doesn't necessarily relate in any way to what we've done before. And our ability to innovate is what allows for invention. Our ability to innovate is what allows for us to genuinely move into a different world. To not just get a better version of the world we live in. So, if you think about music, okay, if you like a kind of music, you can improvise on that music. You can go, oh, I love this song. I'm going to take the bass line from this song and I'm going to rap over it. Or I'm going to take the bass line from this song and I'm going to create a different melody. Or I'm going to take the melody from this song, but I'm going to put some different instrumentation under it, right? And that's like imagination and memory, where we're taking something that's already created and we're, in our minds, improving on it. Well, innovation is what happens when you go back to the notes. When you go back to the eight notes in an octave. I hope there are eight notes in an octave. There might be seven. But maybe the eighth note is like Pluto, and it used to be a note. Now it's not a note anymore. Whatever. There's seven or eight notes in an octave. Right? You're going back to the principles of music. You're going back to the basics, the real basics, before any form, any music has been created. And you're opening up to the possibility that you will play something that has never been heard before. The same is true in writing, right? You know, if you take a form that you like, oh, I like poems like this, so I'm going to write a poem like this, that's like imagination. You're taking the known and improving on it. You're using your imagination to see how it might be even better. Innovation is where you go back to words. And you have all words at your disposal. And something that has never been spoken before can be spoken. Something that has never been said before can be said. And it feels like it's coming at you. It's coming through you, not from you. That's the most common description you'll hear somebody talk about. That's the innovation function of the mind. It's beyond imagination. It's beyond the best you can imagine given what you've known so far. It's independent of anything that has gone before it. It is literally opening yourself up to the new. There's a beautiful description of this in Elizabeth Gilbert's TED Talk on creativity. And she talks about a poet. I don't have it in front of me, so I can't give you the exact reference. Maybe somebody, if you're listening, you can always follow along and you can write me little notes on my Facebook page at facebook.com/mneil. And you'll see there's a Hay House radio page and there's a quote today of the picture of a wastebasket and an Edison quote. To invent, you need a good imagination and a pile of junk. Well, he's talking about invention, innovation, in the way that I'm talking about there. And you can post, if anyone remembers the name of the poet that that Elizabeth Gilbert talks about in her TED Talk. But she describes this poet's description of when a poem comes. She'll be sitting in the field, in the meadow above her house. It always sounds very Little House on the Prairie to me. And she'll see the poem coming in the distance. And she'll run to her house to try and get to her typewriter before the poem gets there, so that it doesn't catch her without anything to write it down with and disappear back into the unknown from whence it came. That's innovation. It's not a variation on a theme. It's going back to first principles, to just words, to just notes, and allowing something brand new to be created from those basic principles. That's the nature of the mind. There are three basic principles. We have this creative capacity we call thought. We have this experiential capacity we call consciousness. And we have this guiding intelligence and energy we call mind. with a capital M, like the big mind, the universal mind, the divine mind. Those three forces, mind, consciousness, and thought, guiding intelligence and energy, experience, and creation. We go back to them and anything can get created. Anything can be experienced. By the way, I'm going to go to the phones in just a minute. So if you want to get on, we already got some people in the queue, but if you want to get on, numbers to call 866-254-1579, toll free in the United States and Canada. Outside the U.S., you can reach the show by dialing your country code, followed by 760-918-4300. Well, let me talk about in discovery, right? So we've made a distinction between imagination and innovation, between variations on a theme and what can literally get created from nothing, just from going all the way back to the basic building blocks of life and creation, of language, of music, of art. Well, discovery is about truth. If you're looking towards truth, if you're looking to see truth in the world, if you're looking to see what is true about life, about the mind, about human beings, about God, about whatever, well, that's neither imagination nor innovation. That's discovery. Because what you're looking for already exists. It's just unseen. Spirit is not about imagination or innovation. True spirit is discovered, not created. Hot dogs are created. Yeah, I'm going to finish the sentence. Okay, I hesitated there. You probably heard that. You probably thought, like, he's having a moment. Well, actually, what I was having was a moment of doubt because I was thinking, can I really say this out loud? Hot dogs are created. God is discovered. That's the difference. Right? Creation, innovation, one of the amazing gifts of a mind. Your mind can innovate. It can also imagine. And imagination is a very mixed blessing because what you imagine can be equal parts awful and wonderful. Right? That's called worrying. And it's called daydreaming. Right? Those are the two functions of imagination. But sometimes daydreaming goes beyond daydreaming to pipe dreaming. It goes beyond just imagining something better than what you've got now to opening up to a different capacity of the mind. Opening up to the new, to the not yet created, to that which is beyond imagination, beyond the known. And these are three capacities of mind: imagination, innovation, and discovery. And if you're trying to think big in your life, you're trying to dream big, but you don't really, you're not feeling expansive. There's not a lot of new there. There's not a lot of insight happening. Well, that's because you're stuck in imagination. You haven't really accessed that place of innovation, that opening through which the new can come. And if you're continually kind of trying to, you know, work out, is it this or is it this? You know, does the mind work this way or that way? Should I use this technique or that technique? Then you're in imagination, trying to imagine what would work best, as opposed to discovery, which is literally looking. Right? There's nothing to do in discovery but to look in a direction, to aim yourself towards truth. To literally orient yourself towards stillness, towards silence, towards the space within. And in doing that, you'll begin to see more and more. There's a famous, within the world of the three principles, outside the world of the three principles, definitely not famous, but Sid Banks, who discovered this articulation, he first articulated the principles of mind, consciousness, and thought. You know, he would say, look in a direction and do nothing. When he was asked, well, how do you See this for yourself. How do you see truth? Look in a direction and do nothing. Well, that's the same way you see birds in a tree. Look towards the tree. Yeah, but then what do I do? Nothing. If you're looking towards the tree and the birds are there, at some point you'll see them. If you're looking towards the unknown, and there's an invisible energy within the unknown, at some point you'll discover it. And when you discover it, you start to see just how powerful it is and how present it has been in your life from the very beginning, how it is creating your reality moment by moment by moment, how without it, without some kind of an intelligence and energy behind the system, we'd be lost 24/7. Without an experiential capacity, without consciousness, the trees could fall in the forest, but we'd never hear them fall. Without thought, without the creative capacity, there'd just be uninterrupted nothingness. So there's another picture I posted on Facebook earlier today. I think 99 times, so it's an Einstein quote again, I think 99 times and find nothing. I stop thinking, swim in silence, and the truth comes to me. So I use my memory and imagination, and I use my memory and imagination, and I use my memory and imagination, and nothing. But then I go to the space where miracles happen. I go to the space within. I swim in the silence. I do nothing. And the truth comes to me. I innovate. I discover. And my life gets bigger. And that's the deeper potential of the mind. That's your creative potential, which I promise you, no matter how creative you are in your life, is largely untapped. You haven't scratched the surface of what's possible, because 99% of the time you're using your imagination to create instead of this larger capacity for innovation and discovery. So we're going to go to the phones. Numbers to call 866-254-1579, toll free in the United States and Canada. Outside the U.S. dial 001-760-918-4300. And I'm going to bring on a woman who I first came to my attention. She wrote me an amazing kind of accounting of what had happened to her with PTSD, and I'm going to ask her to share that experience with us. Her name is Mary Schiller, and she has just released a new book, and I'm going to botch this, Mary, so when I bring you on, you can fix it. But she's just released a new book called something like Aha, How to Solve Any Problem in Record Time. So did I get that mostly right, Mary?
You absolutely got it perfect.
Oh, go me. Go me. So I actually invited Mary on because I noticed she was giving a Facebook Live thing about it. And I thought my show today was called How to Solve Any Problem, and then realized that I'd looked at some old show notice that was a show I did ages ago. But since you're here, Mary, I'm wondering, would you be willing to share your story of how you sort of came to see these principles and how they firstly solved your biggest problem around PTSD, but then also how you're sharing through this book, available on Kindle, would I be right?
Yes, Kindle available and paperback, both.
Beautiful. You know, how that came about.
Yeah, thank you so much, Michael. And so many things came to mind when I was listening to you that actually related to my own story. So just very briefly, I had dealt with post-traumatic stress disorder my entire adult life. I had been in a very violent marriage during my 20s. And even after I left the marriage, the abuse continued in various forms for about another 10 to 12 years after that. So it was basically all of my 20s and all of my 30s and into my 40s that I was dealing with this person who had really set me on a very traumatic path in life. And over those years, I sought help from a lot of different kinds of people, and I continued to do that throughout my 40s. I saw different psychotherapists, and I tried all different kinds of techniques to help me. But to be honest, and this is actually really hard for me to say out loud still, but I saw myself as unfixable. I saw myself as a person who had been permanently damaged by something that had happened to me, and I didn't have any trust or belief that I was actually okay. Like, that was a foreign idea to me. So when you were talking a few minutes ago about, you know, having, you know, this like huge well of creativity and resources at our disposal, I did not see myself like that at all. I felt like that person had been taken away from me, the person I was supposed to be, and had been replaced by this PTSD-ridden human being who was never actually going to be okay. And then I came across your book, The Inside Out Revolution, and I have to say that the first time through it, I really didn't get what you were saying, but I persevered. I stayed in the conversation, as you like to say, and about the third or fourth time through, I was actually listening to the audio version. I heard what you said about people's innate well-being, and I literally was walking on Broadway here in New York City when that really hit me, and I had to go find a bench and sit down because I couldn't keep my balance. I literally felt like the world had shifted and I was permanently changed by realizing that I wasn't broken at all. The only thing that had been happening was I had been listening to a lot of old thoughts that were telling me I needed to be stressed in certain situations, and I needed to be afraid, and just all of these old thoughts that had been circulating for so many years, that was the only thing that had been going on all that time. And to say that was life-transforming, I can't even really put it into words. There are no words to describe what that did for me.
And that's a beautiful example of what I mean when I talk about discovery as a capacity of the mind. We could call it our capacity for insight, to see something from within ourselves that's already there, right? Your well-being was always there underneath. But it just took a little time to see it. And something in you knew that, right? Because you read the book you didn't understand three or four times.
I kept looking because I think you're right. I think I knew that something else was there. I think I knew. I almost feel like that's what hope was for me. I kept hoping that there was something that I wasn't seeing, and I felt like that hope was maybe my innate well-being kind of trying to push itself to the surface for me to see. Mm-hmm.
So tell me a little bit about, so I quickly downloaded your book this morning, and it doesn't take long to read. I really enjoyed it. The book again, Aha! How to Solve Any Problem in Record Time by Mary Schiller, available on Kindle, and you sort of take this idea, what I would call the discovery and innovation function of the mind, and you sort of lay it out as a very simple kind of a problem solving tool. Do you mind sharing the sort of two-step process for...
Yeah. So basically, you know, I spent most of my life trying to solve problems what I call the old-fashioned way, you know, where I just kind of kept focusing. And I had this idea that if I looked away from a problem, that it would somehow turn into a horrible, scary monster that was even worse than I originally thought it was, you know. So what I've discovered happily through my understanding of these principles is that we actually already have this really cool built-in problem-solving method, so I don't have to make myself feel nuts anymore anytime I'm confronted with something like, you know, that looks like a problem. And so the two-step process is quite simple. The first step is that when I feel myself getting really wound up, you know, when I have this, I imagine the little white rabbit, you know, from Alice in Wonderland running through my head saying, hurry, hurry, time's running out, hurry, hurry. Whenever I find myself in that state of mind, I just take a time out. It's almost like I mentally bench myself. And I kind of take a step back, way back from all that kind of stressed out thinking, and I just don't give it any attention. It can kind of still be there. I can sort of see it maybe in the distance, but kind of like what you were saying earlier, I'm not really looking in that direction anymore. So that's really step one. It's just noticing when you have that really worked up feeling and realizing, you know, I'm not going to find the answer there. That's not where it is. So I think I'll just take a time out.
So, and this is kind of absolutely on the theme that we're talking about today, is that, you know, we think the solution to the problem is going to be in our imagination. So we go back, or in our memory, like, or it'll be something we did before, or it'll be a variation on one of those themes. So we go to our memory and imagination. We just keep thinking and thinking and thinking about it. But the one place where we're guaranteed not to find a new solution is in our old thinking.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And in my mind's eye, you know, not many people have file folders anymore, but that's kind of how I picture myself when I'm in that state of mind. Like I'm just rifling through old file folders, you know, trying to find something in there. And when I feel myself doing that, it's like, whoa, not, don't go there. No, that's not it. That's not it.
So then
that's what I used to do.
Right. And so once you kind of go, oh, wait, the answer's not in there, where do you go?
So that's basically step two. And this is what you alluded to earlier, too, is I just wait. I wait, because now with this understanding that I actually have this well, this infinite well of possibilities and opportunities and new ideas, I know that if I wait until my thinking kind of settles down and I'm calm and composed, which is how we're designed, that a possibility will make itself known. It might not be immediate. Sometimes it is. That's what's funny, though. Sometimes it's really quick, you know, but other times it takes a while. But I'm just patient now because I know that the answer is there and it's been there the whole time. I've just been too busy watching that rabbit running around to actually see it.
Well, and this is and what that's what I love about the way you describe it, is that what you're pointing to is the system's already in place,
mm-hmm.
right? It's a discovery, in the way I'm using the word discovery, of the system. So you're suddenly saying, oh, everything I need to solve any problem is already there. And the reason I'm not seeing it is because I'm looking in the place where it isn't.
Right.
And then when you look away from where it isn't and you let the system do what it already is designed to do, boom, aha, insight, boom, aha, insight. It just suddenly presents it. Mary, I'm going to let you go, but please, listening, Aha, How to Solve Any Problem in Record Time by Mary Schiller. It's a lovely book. It's a quick read. It's inexpensive, and it's really, really good. Check it out.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Mary.
Thanks so much. Bye.
Bye. By the way, Martha, you're next in the queue. If somebody wants to get in, 866-254-1579. Toll free. The numbers to call outside the U.S., 001-760-918-4300. And we'll put up a link to Mary's book on the Facebook page as well. Quick quick commercial, I guess. If you are interested in learning more about the principles that we're talking about that led Mary to actually overcome a lifetime of PTSD, and I mean, she's actually a creative fiend. I think last time I looked on her Kindle page, there were, you know, three books and new ones appearing all the time, and she's sort of in this amazing creative flow from what she's seen. We offer a program, which is sort of a complement to the Inside Out Revolution book called Living from the Inside Out. You may recognize the name from this very radio show. And we offer it once or twice a year, and this particular time it's led by two of my apprentices turned colleagues, Maureen Bryant and Steph Sibachowski. And it's a fantastic way of going deeper and understanding what we talk about on the show quicker. And it just started this week, so you can still kind of start right from scratch. There's videos and there's calls, and you can find it on my website, michaelneal.org/LFTIO. And the last little plug I'll give is come see me in Philadelphia this weekend if you're going to be there, or if you're anywhere near there, or if you just want to come. So Hay House is putting on a big I Can Do It. Like, I looked at the lineup, and it was very impressive. There were many, many, many of the top Hay House authors are going to be there, and I'm going to be there giving a talk as well. So if you are there, please come up. Please find me. Please say hello. Please let me know you listen to the show, and I'm not really talking to my wall. I don't really think I'm talking to my wall, but it's always nice to meet you. Let's go back to the phones, and let's go out to Taos, New Mexico, and let's talk to Martha. Hey, Martha, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hi, Michael. It's nice speaking with you once again. In the beginning, I wasn't quite sure if my question would fit into your theme, but I think it does. And my question would be, how do you incorporate dreams and dreaming into your coaching practice? Or do you? And what are your thoughts on dreams, nighttime dreams?
Well, so, okay, my thoughts on nighttime dreams. I think they're really interesting. Like, not always. Sometimes you have boring nighttime dreams. But I do personally, just as a guy, as a human, I find it really interesting, the absolutely wild things that happen in my dreams. And in my coaching practice, I generally use dreams as a metaphor. And the metaphor that I think dreams are such a great metaphor for is our personal thinking, our thought-created realities. And the story that I probably tell most often about it, because it just made me laugh, and some of you may have heard the story, but darn it, I'm going to tell it again because it's about Saddam Hussein and rock stars and famous people. And I had a client, and he came to me before our session. He was a guy. He had a TV show, and the TV show was kind of tanking a little bit. And he came for help me save my show. And before we started actually doing any coaching together, he told me about this crazy dream he'd had the night before, where he'd been on a private jet with a rock star friend of his and Saddam Hussein, who'd been dead for like 5 years, and they were flying out to Russia to party. And he said, partway through the flight in his dream, he realized that Saddam Hussein was having an affair with the rock star's wife. And he got into a real quandary in his head, like, I feel obligated to tell the rock star that his wife's cheating on him with Saddam Hussein, but I don't want to kind of ruin our weekend of fun in Russia. So, and he said he woke up exhausted. Like, absolutely just exhausted from all this debate in his head. And we laughed, and then we got into a coaching session, and in the middle of the coaching session, he quieted down. So sort of like Mary was talking about, you quiet down a bit, and he got an insight, and he realized, oh, I've been thinking that my worth as a human being is reflected in the ratings of my TV show. Well, that can't be true. So he had a discovery, right? He saw something he hadn't seen before. And you could see him literally get handsomer, right? Like he somehow, all that stress went out of him. And then you could see it crawl back in. You could see his shoulders go back up. You could see his face begin to tighten. He actually visibly aged in front of me. And he said, "All right, what do we do about it?" And I said, "What do you mean?" And he said, "Well, what do we do about this self-esteem issue I'm having?" And I said, "Well, that's like asking me, what do we do about Saddam Hussein sleeping with the rock star's wife? It's only happening in your head, so there's nothing you have to do about it." So that's how I incorporate dreams in my coaching practice, because people know, no matter how vivid the dream, no matter how real it seems at the time, when you wake up, you're done. You don't have to go back and do work on it. It's the same
in
our thinking.
So it would fit into your, sorry.
No, just I'll finish the thought. It's the same with our thinking. We all think crazy things from time to time. We all think limiting things from time to time. But once we wake up to the fact that they're just daydreams, they're waking dreams, they're daymares, you don't have to do anything with it once you wake up from it.
Yeah.
Sorry,
so
I
then
cut you off. What
it would be part of the imagination process, the way you describe it.
Absolutely. It's exactly that.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Very cool, Martha. Thank you.
Thanks.
I mean, and you know, a way a psychologist friend of mine explained it is he said that that dreams, you know, our nighttime dreams, are basically when you're processing stuff from your day, but there's no visual, there's nothing coming in for you to project it onto, to see it, you know, in to experience it in consciousness, because you're asleep. So your thought system throws up all of these things that you can project it onto so you can see it. And so essentially the dream is a way of projecting your thinking into your experience when there's no external stimuli to produce, which I thought was a really interesting idea. I don't know if that's true, but it certainly would explain some of the dreams I've had, which have been pretty interesting. So something is going on here. Okay, let me bring Martha. Did I cut you off? I thought
yes,
you.
Yes.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I just came back online just now.
Okay. What was it? What was the rest of your question?
The last thing I heard was that you confirmed that dreaming in this way would be part of the imagination process, and then you started explaining something, and I got cut off.
Well. You can go back and listen to the recording. It'll be on.
Okay.
There. So that's good.
But that was my question. So you answered my question. Thank you.
Oh, we're golden. Yeah. All right. Thank you, Martha.
Thank you.
So why talk about this at all? Right? What is the big deal about, imagination and innovation and discovery are kind of different uses of the mind? Well, here's why it's such a big deal. Right? It's a big deal because we think we're imagining the best that's possible. We think we're really using our brain for a change. We think we're really getting as much out of the system as there to get, because we're trying to imagine positive scenarios. We're trying to imagine what our life could be like. We're trying to imagine how good we could stand it. But we're using such a limited part of our imagination. We're using the memory part of our imagination. And so the best we can imagine is the opposite of what we have. And actually, in most cases, it's not even the opposite. Like when you ask people to, you know, what do you want? Their answer is usually in some way, whether they know it or not, 10% more than they have now. And if you ask them to dream big, they'll go to 20% more than they have now. And it's not about going to 50% more than you have now or 100% more than you have now. As long as you're dreaming in relation to what you have now, you're not really dreaming. You're just imagining. You're just taking your memory of what's possible and projecting it out into the future. And that's such a limited use of the infinite potential, of the infinite creative potential of the mind. As you open up to the infinite creative potential of your mind, you can dream things that have never happened. You can have things come to you that may literally never have come to another person in the world. I mentioned Elizabeth Gilbert. You know, she's the woman who wrote Eat, Pray, Love, and I mentioned her TED Talk on creativity. She has a theory that she puts out that these creative things are already out there and that we just have to open up for them to come into them, that they're there to be discovered, uncovered, not so much created. And I know that feeling. I don't know if that's true, but I know the feeling when something comes to me that I've never seen before, and I get to do my best to put it into words. I get to do my best to articulate it. I get to do my best to introduce it to the world. That is taking advantage of a capacity of the mind that I used to think was, you know, for the special people. You know, Leonardo da Vinci gets it. Michelangelo gets it. Martin Luther King got it. He had a dream. You know, the best I could do was, you know, try and make a bit more money and do some good in the world. Well, once I saw that this creative capacity not only was built into the system, it's part of the factory preset. Your mind is like a radio receiver, and you can tune it to the replays, or you can tune it to the brand new shows that haven't even happened yet. And when you're listening to the replays, they're really good, some of them, but they're replays. And when you tune into a show that is being created live in front of you, then you become part of the creative process. You become a channel for the creative potential. You become a conduit for creativity. And people ask, well, what is creativity? Well, you know, at times, our relationship to creativity, to me, is like being pregnant, right? The idea comes, it comes to us, and where we become pregnant with it, we become filled up with it. And if we stick with it, we give birth to it. And then it takes on a life of its own in the outside world. And sometimes it's more like midwifery. It's not so much that we're impregnated, it's that this idea wants to come into the world. It really feels like it's got a will of its own. And our job is to gracefully facilitate its entry into the world, sort of creative water birth. All right, that's just a kind of a nice metaphor to leave it on. So let's go to Mitchell in San Francisco. Mitchell, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hi, Michael. My question is essentially, how do you tune into the new show? Coming off your metaphor you just shared, yeah. You know?
Well, so the easiest... Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
This morning I awoke to some big news that created so much, like, kind of panic and crisis in me, and I thought, okay, well, let me just quiet down. Let me sit and meditate and quiet in my mind, and I sat to meditate, and my mind just was going off. And it's like, how do you create stillness? Where do you... When the thoughts just keep coming...
So there's two things that come to mind when I hear the question. And it's a question that I think anyone who's ever realized, I'm driving myself nuts now, wants an answer to for themselves. So the first part of it is, I'll answer it the way you asked it first, and then I'll answer it the way you asked it second. The way you asked it first is, how do I tune into the new show? Well, you tune into the new show by tuning out the old show. Like, it's that, you know, the one place where the new isn't is in the old. You might get a variation on a theme in the midst of the old. But as long as you're thinking the same thoughts and running through the same ideas, that is not where it's going to happen. And when you let that go as best you can, you drop those thoughts as best you can, you take a time out, as Mary Schiller said earlier in the show, as best you can. That space that's left there That's the space through which the new show will be hearable, will be heard. So that's the first part. Now, the second way you ask the question is, well, how do I create quiet? Well, see, this is a great example of what I was talking about, discovery, as different to innovation. You don't create quiet. Quiet is what's there all the time underneath the noise. Stillness is our nature. It's only because of the silence that we can hear. So you orient yourself towards it. You look in that direction and you do nothing. And because there's something there to see, you begin to see it and you begin to feel it. And it begins to permeate your cells. It begins to presence itself simply through the act of being noticed. See, we don't have to create it. It's the very nature of consciousness.
So I hear, what I'm hearing is, it's a big letting go. And my mind is racing, and I'm thinking about all this stuff. I feel like, well, just let it go, let it go, let it go.
Do you mind if I poke around a little bit?
No, you're welcome.
Okay, great. Why would you let it go? Not saying you should or shouldn't, but why would letting it go seem like a good idea?
Because I'm trying to access quiet in this very noisy. I just want to try to let go of whatever's grabbing me.
Okay. So I love that. So that's that. Yeah, that begins to make sense. But it's interesting the way you said that. I want to let go of what's grabbing me. Right? You can't let go of what's grabbing you. You can let go of what you're grabbing.
Hmm.
Now, here's the thing. Thoughts can't actually grab you. It's always us that grabs them.
Hmm.
Now, we grab them for a variety of reasons. We grab them out of habit. We grab them because we think they might have an important message for us. We grab them because as long as they're in front of us, they can't hurt us. But somehow, if they get away from us, they'll attack us. It's like Mary Schiller was saying, she wanted to keep her fears in front of her because if she looked away, she thought they'd get bigger. Well, that's, you know, we did a live event in LA over the weekend. We did the last weekend of Supercoach Academy, but then we also did a Friday night talk called Finding the Extra in the Ordinary. And one of the questions somebody in the room asked is, well, if I don't think about my scary thoughts and the thoughts that upset me, isn't that denial? And I asked him just on a whim, I said, are you planning to go see the new Blair Witch Project movie? You know, the horror film. And he said, no. And I said, well, are you in denial about there being a Blair Witch Project movie? Or are you just choosing not to sit in front of it for 2 hours? Right? We don't have to think anything. And when our thinking hurts, that's a sign that we might not want to think that. In the same way as when I put my hand on a stove and it hurts, that's a pretty good sign that I might not want to leave my hand there. So that's why you let go. It's not a blanket prescription. It's not a good idea. You let go because it hurts. You let go because it's in the way. It's stopping you from seeing what's already there underneath it.
Yeah. And I just see the habit of, I see where my habit comes into play here. You know, the habit of grabbing that thought.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a habit.
It really is. And look, we all have habits of thought. And like any habit, they're like arbitrary. which ones we've got. It's like, and the, here's the thing, though. Once you see that that's all that it is, you don't have to do anything with it. Like, habits extinguish themselves through lack of use. The less attention you pay them, the less habitual they become, right? It's actually, you know, operant conditioning, behavioral modification 101 from Pavlov and Skinner and, you know, the early 20th century psychology. It's just, that's how it works. You don't keep reinforcing it, and it fades over time. That's it.
Got it.
Very cool, Mitchell.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. You know, I've got a coaching group at the house. I do these small group coaching things from time to time. Got one coming up in November. If you go to michaelneal.org, you can get more info about stuff like that. And one of the things we've been talking about is spaciousness, right? That's another way of talking about the quiet. That's another way of talking about this infinite creative potential. And spaciousness is discovered, not created, right? The nature of the universe is space. And we fill that spaciousness up so much of the time that we don't notice. We fill it up with our personal thinking. We fill it up with activity. We fill it up with whatever we fill it up with. And we might be filling it up with lovely things. Now, we can't really fill it up because it's infinite. You can't fill up an infinite well. But it feels like we're filling it up, because what we're really filling up is our own consciousness. What we're really filling up is our own little mind. And so it feels like we need to create space. Well, you don't need to create space. You need to not fill it up so quickly. And when you fall out of your conceptual mind, when you fall out of your personal thinking, you fall back into your natural way of being. You fall into meditation. You fall into space. You fall into quiet. You fall into stillness. And that's what we're all after, right? All the practices that you practice, all the rituals that you rich, I don't know what the equivalent of practicing practices is for rituals, but all the things that you do to quiet your mind. And the irony is, but for all that doing, your mind's already quiet. That's why we can experience meditation without meditating. That's why we can experience stillness without having to actively still the mind. I'm not saying don't do that. If your practices bring you joy and peace, practice away. But don't think that that's why you're peaceful, that but for your practice, peace wouldn't be available. Peace is your nature. It's in you right now. You're either feeling it or you're not. You're in touch with it or not. But it's something that you will discover in you. You don't have to create it. You want to create, you've got imagination or innovation. And I'm suggesting that innovation opens up a whole new world. You want to find who you already are and what's inside you. That's a voyage of discovery. And as I think it was Proust who said, you know, the voyage of discovery is not a voyage of seeing new things. It's seeing with new eyes. And that's the bigger potential of the mind. So I hope you enjoyed the show. I hope I see you in Philadelphia or at one of our events like Living from the Inside Out at michaelneal.org. Until next time, have fun, learn heaps, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.